And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. What you're about to hear tonight is a most fascinating theory by the crypto hunter John Rhodes. And of course, he's been called the world's foremost authority on ancient reptilian humanoids or reptilian aliens. His pioneering work investigating claims of reptilian alien contact and years of presenting this research all over the place has resulted in the creation of entirely new genre of study in the UFO community, just on the UFO hunters as well. John Rhodes back on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm fine, George. How are you?
Good, good. Good to be with you. Halloween go well for you and the family?
It did. It did. It was nice to see all those kiddikoos out there in their goblin outfits mixing it up with the real ones. Kind of hard to tell the difference sometimes, isn't it?
I put a little plastic pumpkin out there on the porch because I had a Halloween party to go to, and I didn't want to leave the little ones with nothing. And I filled it to the brim, John, with all kinds of little pieces of candy. And,
you know,
I'm not Mr. Sugar guy, but I figure once a year it's Halloween, what the heck?
Absolutely.
I came back from the party, and the pumpkin was gone.
Somebody must have thought it was edible.
They took the whole thing, and I'm saying to myself, God, you know what? I'm a little ticked that the kid did it, or you know, a group of kids took it, but I hope they did it at the end and not at the beginning. Because if they took it at the beginning, then, you know, the entire neighborhood got nothing from it.
Well, I'm thinking that they probably took it at the end.
Well, that's positive thinking, at least.
Yeah.
At least. So what have you been doing since our last chat?
Well, I've been kind of busy. You know, the last time we spoke, it was just getting off the UFO hunters talking about underground bases.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that apparently that's the second most watched UFO hunter there has been yet. It was interesting to be able to bring out some of the evidence that we showed, like the two photographs of the tunnel boring machines being tested at Los Alamos, which most people hadn't seen, the type that melt through rock. And also, we tried to actually get the RAND Corporation, which is an offset of the U.S. Air Force, to allow us to show a lot of the maps and documents that they had about hypervelocity tube shuttle systems crossing the United States, but the RAND Corporation or the Pentagon wasn't very cooperative in it, so we did the best we could with what we had. Interestingly enough, there appears to have been two counterintelligence operations going on in order to counter the large public exposure to this kind of potential for underground bases and such. And one was in Fox Television and the other was MSNBC. They were the government, we gave them about 4 weeks advance notice that we wanted the documents, so it was up on radar up in Washington that we were going to be showing this stuff. And by the time it was 6 weeks later, they had allowed a reporter to write a book, an author to write a book on Area 51 for the first time in history, gave access to five former employees. And they were talking about one of the Oxcart programs going on there. And during the two broadcasts, one on Fox, they actually were referring to Independence Day, the film, saying that they were in Independence Day that were, you know, showing tubes and trains and shuttles linking underground bases. And that just does. Let's look at the real facts regarding Area 51, when in all actuality, it wasn't presented in the film at all. So that kind of came out of the blue sky for them to have said that. In addition to that, the author, when she appeared on MSNBC, towards the end of her interview, when they were rushing along, tended to say that she had spoken to one of the employees at Area 51. And even though these guys said that they worked underground, there only was one above-ground tunnel, whatever an above-ground tunnel is. And she said that stories about trains linking underground bases and tunnel systems like that are offsets from a couple of guys having a drinks in a bar in Las Vegas, and they're just purely overblown drunken talk. And so I thought that this was kind of, it was interesting that the press has never spoken about underground bases and tube shuttle systems before. We've never seen anything really about it, even in mainstream UFO programming. But all of a sudden you had two news outlets kind of like out of context throwing that in there when it really had nothing to do with the subjects they were speaking about. So it appears from an investigator's viewpoint that there was actually a cause and effect there that was actually pretty good. The other thing was is that we did the main purpose with addressing Dulcie all these years was to release the information that we had obtained about one of the former employees that worked there. and also to bring to the public's attention the dangers of human experimentation and using human guinea pigs, specifically people that may end up missing from the streets of America that we have not yet found, and showing the dangers of fusing human and animal parts for a super soldier program that may be conducted. Because if we weren't using humans, our enemies and foreign nations most likely are. So in some way, they would justify that in doing it in some surreptitious way. But interestingly enough, back there in Washington, it seems that, you know, it did take notice. The Human-Animal Hybrid Prohibition Act of 2009 was introduced on July 9th. That's after the Dulce program. By Senator Sam Brownback with Senator Mary Landrieu, a Democrat out of Louisiana, and 20 co-sponsors. And it basically said that they were very concerned about the fusing together of human and animal parts to make hybrid animals, or manimals, as they would be.
Sure.
And so we feel in some way just being able to get that out there and just being able to get the mass media to talk about that may have generated enough interest to stimulate Washington into actually going forth and trying to create some sort of a protective act for American citizens so they're not just swept up in some sort of a medical program without their consent. I think that's a good thing. I mean, we've heard about hybrids and people being taken off the streets by aliens and government types, and it's nice to see some legislation come out of Washington finally that makes sense.
Of course, if there's a black ops program underway, John, somehow or something sinister, I'm not sure legislation would stop that.
No, I'm in absolute agreement with you. I think, though, however, it's a matter of, you know, just being able to say that at least a step has been taken, even though it may be one that may not be so effective, at least somebody's taking some notice of it.
Hey, you were recently on talking about the Men in Black, and we're not talking about Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones. We're talking about serious Men in Black, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
What are they up to?
Well, there are different types of Men in Black. The first ones that are out there are the Department of Defense agents, and basically their sole job is to limit public knowledge. And I guess if you meet them, you must know something too much. They, no matter from where they're coming from, they do share one goal, and that's to enforce cooperation through intimidation with the targets that they encounter. And
do they scare people?
What was that?
Do they scare people?
Oh, absolutely. We're talking about individuals that come up to you that sometimes are so obviously government, you don't even ask for an ID because they have such confidence.
Yeah.
And you know that they're packing weapons and they're smartly dressed. And other times they're not exactly human, so they do kind of, you know, mystify people. One of the things that most people don't know, and right out of the CIA's own website, they make a comment out of here on January 24th, 1946, Truman appointed Rear Admiral Sidney Sowers to the first director of the Central Intelligence, to the Central Intelligence Group. And also his chief of staff was there. In his chief of staff's diary, you know, he wrote down something mysterious. He said, at lunch today in the White House, with only members of the staff present, Rear Admiral Sidney Sowers and I were presented by Truman with black cloaks, black hats, and wooden daggers. And the president read an amusing directive to us outlining some of our duties in the Central Intelligence Group, the cloak and dagger group of snoopers. Now, this is right out of the CIA's own website. So when we talk about Men in Black, even they, for many, many years before this became a popularized subject, had recognized that they're into this kind of a ritual dress, that the guys that work for the Department of Defense, these guys all wear the same outfits. If you go to work somewhere, they wear the same color ties. You don't deviate from the color tie that they wear. Otherwise, you're an outsider. So these guys are definitely into the ritual dress. There are others that are foreign nationals. Some of these Men in Black may be representatives of foreign nations, and we have to be aware of that. Sometimes they've been seen to have olive skin. People have traced this connection back to the Tibetan Agartha, the inner world, and beings that may be coming from there, because even like the crash victims over in Roswell, like you have so eloquently have pointed out, yes, they did have reptilian beaded skin, but also they had these faces that reminded people of Tibetans, that like dried up dark. And there have been other reports of the Men in Black who have shown up in the earliest part of this century a long time ago, and people thought that they were foreign nationals because they had very, very dark skin and very almond-shaped eyes.
And what's their mission, though, John? What are they trying to do? Get people just to be quiet?
They're trying to protect the secrets, and some of these secrets are just military secrets, corporate secrets. There's other aliens that may, obviously, there's some sort of set of rules that all these guys are going by. We've encountered so many alien types, yet at the same time, there seems to be a rule book by which they have to play. And this means that you can't have open contact, and when you do, you're either running rogue and you're doing something you shouldn't be, or else there's been a crash or some sort of mistake. And these guys are like mafia sweeping teams. They come in and they sweep up the area. And
they shake you down, don't they?
Absolutely, they shake you down. And the scary part is, on some of these incidences we've heard throughout the years, these guys come out and there's a phone call waiting for a UFO eyewitness when they get back to their house after stepping outside and seeing the craft. So people are wondering, what in the world is going on and who are these guys?
And there are how many, do you think? Hundreds of them?
I wouldn't think there's hundreds. I know that each underground military installation has operatives of their own that work their local areas for some reason or take out, it's like contract jobs out from the main headquarters.
I'm going to talk about some of your personal experience when we come back. We're going to take this quick break with our guest tonight, the crypto hunter, John Rhodes, on Coast to Coast AM. John, tell us more about some of the personal encounters with Men in Black that you have uncovered or maybe even experienced?
Oh, wow, that's a loaded question.
Would I do that to you?
Yes, you would, actually. I know you a little too well. I would say that I would have to start with the most recent one. Let's talk about that. When we did the UFO Hunters recently and we talked about the Men in Black, they called me up and said, where did you have your encounter? And I told them that I had an encounter outside the Grand Canyon Caverns, just about half a mile east of it, in Arizona. Now, this is a large limestone area. There's a lot of limestone cave formations throughout the southern part of the Grand Canyon. And as you and I have spoken about before, for years I researched based on that 1909 article about what the Smithsonian Institution found in the area of the Grand mm-hmm. Canyon. And also tracing down ancient archaeological sites. I'm not an archaeologist myself, but I know enough to, you know, see the signs that there's been some form of habitation in areas and look for different anomalies that might point out where an underground base is. And I actually encountered with an associate of mine, Men in Black, down there at one instance. A colleague of mine had told us that they had received a phone call from somebody telling us that that me and my other friend should back off our investigations in the area. Otherwise, we're going to end up underground, and they meant like in a box. And we were told this, and we actually thought that our friend was having us on. You know, it's really nice to have somebody with a little bit of an imagination that wants to spice up a little, you know, road trip. And when we got all the way out there, there was a small turnoff area that I had been to once before, and drove out there. And as I pulled up, here were two men standing one was leaning against the other car. The other one was just standing beside it, immaculately dressed. The car was a dark color. These guys, one stayed near the car all times and didn't interact with us. I started to get out, and my friend said that he wasn't going to get out because at that point he knew what was going on and he felt I was to blame. Anyway, I talked him into coming on the road trip with me. And I actually had a talk with this gentleman where he knew me by my name. He said that he asked me what I was doing there. I said I was just looking around the area. And he said, you know, you can fall down and get hurt out there. And it was just kind of like a silly statement to say, but it was enough to relay a hint of, yep. of some sort of intimidation. And I
yes,
said, well,
that's right.
Yeah. And, you know, look, these guys that I met were men who had jobs. These weren't alien types. These were human types. But there was something still very odd about them, their behavior. And I don't know if it's just that, you know, they have a modus operandi where they say act a little weird at things at times so people don't know what they encountered or who they encountered or do something silly. I don't know if that's it. But when I left there, I had been well aware that they had made contact, although I proceeded on my way. When they left, I just didn't even turn around. I mean, it was like I knew that I had the encounter, and these guys were telling me not to look around there, which actually means there's something going on there. When I met with the UFO hunters down there this last time, I most recently found out that there's been cattle mutilations in the ranch directly across from the caverns, and that they had a forensic artist come out and take illustrations from us based on our testimonies as to what we've seen. About 3 or 4 days after the road crew gets back to the production company, they call me and ask me if I had picked up the papers or if something. And I said, "What are you talking about?" And they said, "Well, all of the illustrations the forensic artist did of my description disappeared from their files." So now I don't know about these other gentlemen who were interviewed, but I know that what happened there to me was a real event. So that was a little bit of a cause like of concern. Interestingly enough, television production shows like that don't like to, when something happens, they don't like to tip their hat as to being involved in anything. You know, it would have been easy for the production company to make it part of the show, just saying what had happened, because it was a mystery into itself.
I think Bill Burns has been hinting that they've been stepping on some toes, and that could be a reason why this program may or may not get renewed.
Well, I think that just showing the effectiveness, like I was starting our interview off tonight, talking about what had happened out in Washington, and even that there were counterintelligence operations taking place to counter what the general public was hearing, that's a good sign. That means that audience is effective. Otherwise, they wouldn't have to go to such extents in order to make it stop or go away. I think it's critical for us out there in the UFO community to really support things like the UFO hunters and Bill Burns, because when you do get a group of people out there who are really trying to fight, you know, the pencil pushers back in the studios and everything to get the job done correctly, and it's not always their choice how things turn out, it's a good thing for the UFO community. And in relationship to that, I'll just tell you that out my website, if you go there, I have a Man in Black article kind of tacked off to the side of my website, reptoids.com. It'll say Men in Black. I actually have an article there about the Men in Black and the potential reptilian-human connection to it. But also, there's a link off of there that shows it's an airline ticket of mine with a jury summons notice and a little note that I put on there that talked about my appearance on the 2002 Conspiracy Zone show. Kevin Nealon and the producer pulled me, this is the second appearance when I went on there. Kevin Nealon and the producer pulled me aside and said, you know, interestingly enough, some of the people that have been on our show have told us later that when they got back home, there was a jury summons waiting for them. And actually, we kind of laughed it off because they knew it was some sort of a proverbial wink and nod just by hearing back from people about that. Mm-hmm. It was becoming an anomaly to them. When I got back home, there was my jury summons sitting there in the mail for me, just waiting for me. So I just thought I'd throw that up on the internet for everybody to look at if they wanted to see, you know, the kind of things that go on that researchers like myself have to really endure, and it's not the easiest thing. And also, one other event occurred back in Las Vegas, about the same timeline as this thing in the Grand Canyon, where I was sleeping at night. I had a window that faced the front of where I parked my vehicle, and I had a little Maltese dog who had a tucked-up area on the edge of the bed beside the curtain so he could look out and kind of keep himself. He had the guard dog duty, and he loved it. One night,
a little Maltese had the guard dog duty?
Absolutely. You know, you know. Hey, listen, they'll avoid breaking and entering a house if they know it's a dog. They'll always go to the one next door, no matter how big. So
that's true. That is true.
I'm laying there, and I hear him in the middle of the night, you know, kind of growling. And I kind of open this curtain and look out at just about the size of my thumb, just put a little hole in it and look out what's happening. He's growling at. And I saw a gentleman in a black outfit leaning down and doing something under the wheel of my car. Whoa. And as soon as I was looking at him, maybe about 3 or 4 seconds had passed, he stands up, he immediately turns and looks at me, and he walks directly to the back of my car, and another vehicle comes up behind him, a black vehicle. The door, it must have pneumatically or somehow there was pressure in the vehicle because the door popped open by itself before he even reached for it. The driver on the inside was not leaning over to show that he had opened up his door.
Yeah.
Inside the vehicle, I could see that it was full of heads-up displays, and it looked like a panel out of a luxurious jet fighter, an executive jet of some sort. There was a blue LED trim around it. I knew that it looked like the vehicle may have been pressurized, and the vehicle took off. So that was the only time. And strangely enough, you know, when that occurred, I knew what I was watching, but I didn't get panicky. I just relaxed and went back to sleep. Now, that was kind of odd in itself, because with seeing something like that, it wouldn't initially just have me so comforted that I would just go back to sleep. It wasn't until afterwards I started thinking about it. Now, how does this man with his back to me know that I'm peeking through this curtain inside my house unless there was a camera in the house?
And it was there for some time.
Right. And you know the cloaking technology they've talked about, and they're starting to reveal as far as their abilities with craft and in the future what we can do with camouflage. Well, if we're talking about technologies that are 50 years in advance from some of these underground black ops installations and such, or even traded with alien species, there could be monitoring devices hanging up in the corner of rooms that are passively powered and are transmitting signals all the time, and we have no idea they're even there.
John, do you think these men in black are primarily out to protect stories of UFO encounters and to get to UFO eyewitnesses? Is that their main thrust?
Well, there's been a lot of cases of men in black contact, but it seems that the most believable ones and the ones that have seemingly cost lives are the ones that are associated with individuals talking about the inner world here on Earth, the caves and caverns, and
all
what
right.
the potential is, what's underground here.
Are you concerned at all about your own safety? Are you tentative at all about anything?
You know, I am. I guess it's just a matter of, you know, it gets down to pick your own battles. And there are some things that I hold on to evidence to that I know the public would just love to hear, but I don't dare say anything. Because I get worried that if I do, if it's not directly related to my my cryptozoological pursuit of reptilian humanoids and how they're associated with advanced underground civilizations, then I really have to choose my battles, and I just kind of tucked them away. I have people that have read reports I've written who think I'm a blithering idiot for not letting people read them because they're so damning. But at the same time, you know, there's other work to be done, and this thing about reptilian humanoids and trying to get this promoted into a subject of serious debate so we can get some scientific investigations of what's going on and get some pressure in Washington, that's my main battle.
I've known you for years, John, for years. But tonight you seem as if you've been threatened, and you're not telling me that you have. But you seem like that something has happened. And if I'm treading too closely to something, stop me now.
Well, you know, I just, a lot of the times I prepare for interviews, I purposely do not write or transmit or even say, make notes about what I am going to say, because I'm afraid that if they're one step ahead of us, the best way to ever do anything is to be as unpredictable as possible. So that is the way I've managed to stay alive, I guess. Because, you know, some of the things I brought out to the public's attention have been pretty damning. And I say that only in as much as I'm trying to shake the pillars of institutions, science, and politics so that we can break some of this advanced technology out so we can use it to prepare for the events that we have before us.
Are you expecting a little tap on the door after this program?
I've always been expecting a tap on the door. And, you know, interestingly enough, that's just not how it occurs. Usually when people are having an encounter, it's when they least expect it. Sometimes I've heard reports of people having encounters. For example, somebody having an encounter in the middle of the night to where they only remember fragments of a contact or a conversation. There was one case in which somebody reported back to me that they knew something happened because the next morning is the only time in their life they've ever woken up saying anything, and they said something, repeating it over and over and over again. They woke up saying, the men in black came, the men in black came, the men in black came, and they woke up saying that over and over again. And it wasn't until later on, through some regressive hypnosis, they found out that this person actually had some sort of an encounter, and it was one in which the threat was so severe that it extended to their immediate family in the next rooms in the here and now. And these guys, you know, you'd like to think that it's a threat that you can negotiate out of, but that's not often the case. I know one individual that was taken to an underground room in which it was wall-to-wall concrete. On the center of it were iron rungs actually cemented into the concrete, leather restraints and handcuffs. They brought somebody in and handcuffed them, and the person was screaming. They brought them in and handcuffed them to the floor and to the restraints and proceeded to give them an injection. And the next thing was asked to the person, do you want to leave? And of course, the answer was, well, of course, you know, yes, I want to go.
Yeah, fast.
But that was enough of a threat. And they just said there and then, you will never speak publicly again, period. And that person has never, ever spoken publicly again.
I want to talk a lot next hour about the humanoid reptilian theory.
All right.
And what it means. But for the basis of some new people who join us all the time, John, Give us an overview of your theory of this reptilian humanoid theory.
We're basically talking about like 97% of all life on this planet has yet to be encountered by human beings. We've only known about maybe a few million, maybe 4 or 5 million tops, but there's actually up to maybe 100, 150 million other creatures out there that we have yet to encounter. Now, most of these are going to be insects, and most are going to be different invertebrates and such, but there are going to be animals, mammals, and reptiles alike. Some of them are very large. And as we're finding out more and more, the intelligence that animals have, it's just a matter of our observing them to find out how intelligent they are. Well, there is an interest developed years ago on my part, in which I heard reports of people meeting reptilian humanoid beings, and there were very few and far in between. And I started researching these reports, and when I started seeing there was a coincidence of research based on the physical descriptions people were giving me and what Dale Russell, a paleontologist, had said when he did a project for NASA to develop a report based on the potential intelligence of life in the universe. He pointed to the dinosaurs and used a dinosaur called the Troodon as evidence of where the dinosaurs were headed. And he projected forward what would have happened to the dinosaur or what may have happened to the dinosaur if it was allowed to survive. And eventually the projected image was an upright, walking, talking, human, reptilian humanoid, which is identical to that which ancient history had reported. And it could be possible that some of the beings that we're meeting here are actually, you know, evolved here on this planet. Some may have evolved to reach a high degree of technology and then left to explore space and left others behind. And those who left to explore are suspected one day of coming back. And that one day is suspected, again, of quickly approaching, being December 22nd, 2012, just to coincide with the Mayan calendar. And also the whole return of Quetzalcoatl or the feathered serpent, and this is how it might all connect into the very active UFO areas down in Mexico. And the terrestrial the point of view is just one that is just not spoken of very much. I think that when Eisenhower said that there is no extraterrestrial threat, they may have been actually speaking the truth at that time. They may have met reptilian humanoids or greys that claimed that Earth was also their own home planet. And at that time, you know, the idea of extraterrestrial threat could have been, you know, something that was non-existent. So, you know, a good Philadelphia lawyer would say, you know, if they're not asking the right questions, we have this loophole. And the loophole that I'm challenging everybody out there, every listener to use, is that stop using the terms extraterrestrial or alien all the time, and let's get a little bit more defined. There's extraterrestrial, but there's also a large group of interterrestrial or terrestrial creatures that developed intelligence here on our planet. They may appear alien, but they're native Terrans. So as soon as we start asking for under Freedoms of Information Act requests and such like that by defining our language to non-human intelligent beings that may or may not be native to Earth, I think that helps us in our pursuit of the truth.
You've heard some people say that they think that some members of the ruling elitist class, seem to have reptilian eyes when they get angry, or they just seem to have a shifting of their eyes. Mm-hmm. Might this be what we're talking about as well?
Well, yes, I think that there may be individuals and beings out there that have attained human form, but I don't necessarily believe, like some of the paranoid wave that rushed through ufology in its own fringe way of kind of like declaring that every one of our leaders on this planet are aliens, or because, you know, that is just like projecting all the ills of our own thinking and the way we treat each other onto what, a species that's not here to defend themselves. You know, how mature is that? And we've done terrible things to each other. This thing about the eyes is that, you know, two things. I think that the eyes are the windows to the soul, and we know that the seat of the human soul is the seat of the psyche, which is the reptilian complex that's sitting back on the top of your brainstem. And from there, we sense what God is, we sense what space is and time, and I think that's what people are also seeing in these encounters with other people.
John, and I've got to ask you, when we come back, by people, when they have described the devil, to me, they're describing something that looks reptilian. Let's talk about that, too, when we come back. John, we were talking about the eyes of these reptilians and what they might mean behind the eyes of human beings. What do you think?
The eyes of reptilians behind the eyes of human beings. I think that I've heard reports where people have had encounters where one became angry or threatened by another person, where they said that they could see their eyes change and shift into like a vertical slit pupil. Now, I know that there is something called eidetic memory, and eidetic memory is a form of a visual overlay, no different than like birds when they see geomagnetic lines on the earth. The earth, now they've proven that they actually have a visual overlay where they can see geomagnetic lines, and this is how some of them are navigating. And I think the same thing exists over the eyes of a child and over our eyes. And it's not a physical layer or anything like that over your eye. It's a way that your imagination interfaces with your visual system. And that when you actually have an encounter and you feel struck to the heart and you can see that a person is demonstrating an aspect of themselves, which I call the Draco within everybody, then there's this kind of a visual overlay that makes you see that they are being the dragon that they are being. And it's a very subjective thing that happens to very sensitive people. We've seen this thing on the YouTube where they say that the reporter's eyes are look like vertical slit pupils, and that's just not the way that is. That's been shown that it's just the way that the lights in front of the person speaking, the white lights on each side of their of the speaker, are actually squeezing out the iris and making it blend into the white of their eye and making it squeeze out the black where you can't see it. That makes it look vertical. So this is something that's just been overstated, you know, and kind of it's been driving the whole reptilian humanoid thing into the land of ridicule, to hear people go over and over again about some reporter that looks like the reptilian humanoid. And the same thing about the pixelation, when people see that on YouTube, where the pixelation rate is changing and it looks like their face is shape-shifting. I've seen people, you know, that even make the most damning charges against reptilian humanoids on YouTube actually do the same thing. And that can't mean that everybody is a reptilian humanoid. So I think that we're sensing something within ourselves, and then there are going to be the cases where we're dealing with something that's not entirely human. It's just very, very difficult to actually determine how that might be. It's not like they all, you know, everybody's that's reptilian humanoid is out there, you know, telling everybody who they are.
John, tell us a little bit about some of the reports that have come into you over the years that got you to investigate this, and are they evolving themselves? Are they changing?
Yeah, in the very first, the reports were from very good people. Some of them were just, you know, they were what you'd call even pillars in society. These are individuals that came forward saying that they had seen something. It was highly anomalous. They were embarrassed by seeing it. They couldn't deny it, and it was bugging them. And they really would prefer not to have seen it at all. It was disruptive to their life, and they found it hard to focus in their normal life after that. some of these after effects, you know, were so pronounced and in such a negative way that it's not like somebody would be making up stories like that and then putting themselves through such heartbreaking transformation, a psychological self-destruction almost, because their whole reality had come apart. So I started hearing these reports. And then, you know, there were cases like in 1988 in Bishopville, South Carolina, after, you know, 18-year-old Christopher Davis had his sighting. And then the whole town erupted into kind of a circus. Everybody was coming there with dogs and shotguns. They wanted to go into the swamp and hunt this thing down. It was.
People do that. You know
that. They do it, man. That's why people say, you know, John, would you actually direct people to if you've located a cave full of reptoids? And it's like, I don't think I would, really, to tell you the truth. Because
I had a Marine call me a couple months ago on one of my open lines. He said, George, we're going out and we're going to shoot Bigfoot. And I went, no, you're not. And I had to talk him out of it.
Yeah, well, you know, and then can you blame these other species for really trying to stay away from us, you know? And when you start hearing reports like this, one of them actually came from a full bird colonel. You know, he was describing a half-man, half-dinosaur to Sheriff Liston Truesdale out there. And, you know, Liston's an FBI-trained sheriff. This isn't a guy that, you know, takes reports lightly. He knows how to determine if somebody's telling the truth. And then there's all this mix-up with people saying, well, it's really Bigfoot down in South Carolina, when I don't think that a lieutenant colonel is going to make a misinterpretation between a dinosaur man and something like a hairy Bigfoot. It's quite a big difference. In addition to that, most of those sightings, the beings have three fingers, not four, you know, like a typical mammal would have. So I started hearing all these reports, and then I started experiencing resistance in the UFO community to even want to hear any of this.
Why?
Like, well, I think it's because everybody, you know, became kind of, and I hate to say this, in a way, they became resistant to change. They figured that they just got introduced to the little grays, and now we're just not being threatened by them anymore, and it's difficult for everybody to shift around and look in a different direction. In addition to that, I think there was a perception by saying that they were terrestrially evolved was trying to say that they didn't, their points of view were invalid, when actually, like, again, I believe that there was a group that evolved here, was open on the earth side by side with human beings at one time, who went back underground, and a large part of them left, you know, their military industrial elite left to explore space. But these guys are coming back, and this is their planet, you know. And it's interesting to think if we're going to ever be encountering some sort of an encounter in the future, some sort of an open contact in our lifetimes, that if something came here to say that this is their terrestrial origins, then, you know, it doesn't mean we can't live together.
Well, you know? if they're friendly, why are so many people, at least the image of a reptilian, why does it appear to be very, very dangerous?
There's several reasons for it. The first one is that because we are evolved mammals, for millions of years, I think that our ancestors were scrambling under the feet of hungry reptiles, and we were their food. And after enough, you know, the stresses of our environment gave us inherited fears, just like when an animal goes out, you know, in nature, they know that some plants are poisonous. They don't have to eat them to die to find out. They just know they're poisonous. How do they know? How do they know that there are certain other creatures that are inherently dangerous to it? I think that there's a form of inherent intelligence we have that comes across as instinct or some sort of an internal knowledge that we inherit through our ancestors, and that this is the main reason why human beings are predisposed to being afraid of reptiles. They've done studies of this and actually found that school children that haven't met a lot of animals before, there will be more of them afraid of reptiles than there were of other mammal creatures. There's something inherent within human psychology. The other thing, too, is this religious indoctrination we've been going through for, you know, now 2,000 years and such, where really before the transition to the cult of the eagle or Mars-based warrior man's domination over our spirituality in the form of the Roman Catholic Church, This world was dominated, predominantly snake-worshipping, serpent-worshipping cults, and that's from all lands of all nations and all corners of the globe. And that was an image that more or less helped people get along because they unified in their single vision of something that was inherently spiritual in them. So no matter even if they looked different, they had something in common. But when that shifted over to this eagle-based warrior cult, Mars man, a male-dominated system that we live in now, that kind of squeezed that out. And for 2,000 years, we've been told to be afraid of these reptilian humanoids or any forms of them by not only the church, but we find ourselves even nowadays being told to be afraid of them by mainstream conspiracy authors and UFO people. And some of these cases are correct. You should have due vigilance and fear of them, but not necessarily as much as might be currently being promoted. And then there's the media, how they project it through the years. You and I have been watching these programs, you know, from the claymation dinosaurs all the way up through, you know, the earliest times when and we used to see the lizard man hiss, and we saw all these projections of the media where usually anything associated with the snake is painted in a negative light.
True. But, you know, the snake, for example, is part of the logo for medicine, isn't it?
Absolutely it is. So what we're actually looking at there is some sort of a vestigial symbolism from ancient times in which really the snake was a very benevolent transformational character, and it is also within human thinking. But as long as we've been conditioned to be afraid of it, there's really an aspect of our deepest psychology that's connected with the reptilian brain that really we're throwing out of balance. We're acting as if it's not a part of ourselves, and that it's foreign, it's something to be afraid of, and that it's stronger than us, and that's just not the case. It's a part of us. That's one of the things I've always wondered is that there's something magical about being human, in as much as, yeah, we have these emotions, but these emotions can drive a powerhouse in our heart that can help us manifest things that other, maybe aliens can't do. I've always wondered if not only angels, but aliens themselves, even the reptilians, are worried about the full humans reaching their full potential, because they may need devices like, you know, transporters or whatever, like Star Trek, you know, machines to make things. But I think human beings, at some point in time, we will be able to manifest things out of thin air. And we've done it before. And I believe that these other more ancient beings than us, that we are really a piece of all of them. If we think that we were created by some parts of them, then we are the best aspects of them. And we might be one day able to do magical things. And that would threaten them.
Do you remember the movie Enemy Mine with Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr.? Now, that was one of the few movies that ever depicted a reptilian in a good light. Remember that?
Absolutely, it did. And actually, the main message of the film is that we are more alike than we are different. Remember, you know, our leadership and people that keep secrets from us, that manipulate us, they really benefit by us being in fear and having enemies. And you know, when you have the primary forces on this earth actually generating money from making and manufacturing weapons of war, then really peace and the lack of fear doesn't benefit them. It benefits us. So when somebody tries to push us into a fearful state, we have to really wonder who it's benefiting and also who's really a threat. I mean, really, is it the average man that's at threat? Or if something's going to be coming back here that's offering a new chance for us, is it a threat to the existing structure of authority here? And is that authority convincing us to defend it when really it's time for new management? It's just a very difficult political situation that I believe we're going to encounter in the situation in the future. It's not going to be easy.
Now, John, are you saying the reptilians were always here, or they came here and stayed?
I believe personally that there's a high potential for the dinosaurs from the 65 million years ago, some of them to have actually retreated underground and have inhabited the underworld. You know, there's a lot of fresh water down there. There's actually a lot of fresh air that runs through cavern systems
sure.
and such.
Absolutely.
And that some of these dinosaurs, specifically down in Antarctica, that were preconditioned to be living in a dark environment for long periods of time, when this devastation occurred, they were pre-adapted to cold environments, and the cold that may have otherwise forced a lot of, you know, lineages of dinosaurs to die off, these would have been the last ones perhaps to live. And I think that some of the exotic plants and stuff that they were eating. They may have gone back into caves and cavern systems and eventually started eating some of the plant growth that came out of their own fecal matter. And some of that stuff may have actually been of the mushroom form. And this may have actually stimulated self-consciousness at first and maybe gave them the intuitive, quote-unquote, knowledge through out-of-body experiences, even of their own, to know where to go deeper and deeper underground for shelter and protection to where they might one day be able to survive and reproduce to form their own small population groups. And if we could have come as far as we did in 2 million years, even 3 million years, give us 5 million years, we're talking about 65 million years ago, these things evolved into birds. And some of these birds that can even talk, they can sing, they can dance to the beat of music. I mean, these are evolved dinosaurs, you know? So how many other creatures on Earth have actually demonstrated that kind of ability? We're talking about the potential for nature itself to show something so beautiful and so magnificent and intelligent. And I think that we're just on the border of really recognizing what this world is filled with.
And I'm gonna save the devil for you when we come back. We're gonna talk about that, but I want to get your reaction to ABC's show V, and what you think that tie-in could be with reptilian humanoids.
Well, that's an interesting question. I just got up actually this last weekend. I came back from getting a private screening at the home of Jace Hall. He's the executive producer of V, and got a private screening of the premiere of it. And I was joined also by Logan Huffman. He's the young gentleman, the actor that plays Kyle in the series. And Jace, he's more or less the imaginative engine that's running the project. He and Scott Peters have put it together, and they're putting it out. He has also the Jace Hall show and doing things on the internet, and you can Google him or whatever.
Yeah.
But he invited me over, and we watched the premiere. And there's a couple things he wanted to say. First and foremost was that he told me to let you guys know that he was well aware of my research before formulating the ideas for the show for V.
Good.
And that he's been sensitive to the issues that have been brought up in the UFO community in regards to how they're actually presenting this on ABC. So this isn't just some kid out of college who hasn't had his fingers on the pulse of the American public when it comes to the subject matter. And having a gaming background, he's really bringing a new vision of what it is to be, to have the experience and the entertainment of something that would otherwise be fearful to people. And I get the feeling that the show in itself has a lot of potential, and it's really riveting people when you watch it. It's going to be tomorrow night. It's really critical that this show starts making it. Some people would charge that it's some sort of a New World Order thing or anything like that. And it's just a revival of some series that we saw back in the 1980s. And I think that it has the potential of helping desensitize us to the reptilian humanoid character, and also to wake humanity up to the importance of it. No matter what comes from outer space, when something arrives to say that it's a savior, whether it's a gray, whether it's a reptoid, whether it's a Mars-based man giant or something like that, that we have to be careful not to fall into sudden worship or to feel that the saviors have arrived, because regardless of what we look like, we still, many of us share similar characteristics, and deceit is one of them.
Absolutely. And the premise of this show, of course, is the extraterrestrial race comes to Earth with good intentions, seemingly, only to slowly reveal their true machinations, and then they try to ingrain themselves into society. So they trick us, though, don't they?
Right. Well, it's a trick, but also what it is it really is a deeper exploration of human consciousness and how we can experience leadership and be lured by it. And it has, there's a lot of social statements that are made in the programming as well. So they're bringing a lot of fresh things out. And, it is a matter of a deceptive means. But, even God in the Bible uses deceptive means to get the jobs done sometimes. And so it's not entirely wrong. Sometimes you coming out, you know, by revealing your true intentions at first may not be the thing to do. This program really is an exploration of all the things that we've been talking about for 20 years on Coast to Coast. You know, Jace is a fan of yours.
Yes,
Logan's a fan of yours.
Tommy's working with getting him on the show as guests.
Absolutely. Logan's excited about it. He wants to be able to come out. These are the guys that are playing the parts and writing down, and they're truly doing their best to try and absorb all our concerns and play it out in a format which will be entertaining, but at the same time, thought-provoking.
And let's talk about that when we come back, John. Thought-provoking. Do they know something that most people don't? Are we trying to be desensitized? And then again, why does this thing look like the devil? We'll be back in a moment with John Rhodes, the Crypto Hunter, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We've got John Rhodes with us, the Crypto Hunter. I like that title, by the way, John. It fits you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, now the devil. The devil looks like a reptilian.
He does, George.
So the question is, what came first, the devil and people called him a reptilian?
Mm.
Or did the reptilians come here and maybe people thought they were the devil? What do you think?
Well, I think that perhaps, and I've heard this said by a pagan once, somebody that was definitely pagan. They said that if there was no devil before, after Christianity appeared, there certainly was. In other words, the thought consciousness itself may have actually manifested something really, really negative and evil. You know, in that book that we read, that we hold so close to our heart for many of us, the Bible, it does actually talk about a reptilian in the Garden of Eden, and that this reptilian bestowed intelligence upon people. And that in the original garden, we weren't supposed to be intelligent. We were supposed to be slaves. We were supposed to be gardeners. We were supposed to tend the fields. But something came along and said that you're much more worthy of being more godlike than you are just slaves. And for that, kind of woke humanity up. That's the old story. And for that, that reptilian, or that I would call it perhaps a Draco, because the oldest texts of the Jewish texts actually speak of it having wings and having the two legs of a man and the two arms of a man and being as tall as a camel. This kind of fits right along what we would classically call a devil looking like being.
Mm-hmm.
Horns, wings, reptilian skin, and you know, the whole horn issue is another thing, too, because even in the ancient drawings of Moses coming down the mountain after he saw God, they draw him depicted with horns. The earliest angels were depicted with horns. So we're actually talking about this being, which was in the garden, of being able to help humans out, and for that was cast underground. And since that time, it's always been projected as an image of something that was negative and evil, when actually it was trying to make us something more than what we were designed to be. There's a lot of people that believe that, you know, that these things, these devils, as you might call them, they have enemies. And this is where we might be coming up to some sort of an event in the future of some sort of conflict. But definitely you're talking about something coming from underground, because the reptilian humanoid image is synonymous with the underworld. And that when you start looking at the area which we have long associated with death and mystery, and talking about something coming from the other side.
And hell.
Absolutely. You know, not a good place. That this invokes a lot of fear in everybody. So they usually are associated, these beings, with fear. Remember, in the Bible, there was God turns around after Adam and Eve were woken up, and he turns around at the serpent and Eve, and he says that he's going to create an enmity between the serpent and Eve and their offsprings. In other words, somebody came along and said, I'm going to make sure that you guys think of each other as enemies, so you don't get along anymore. I don't want to have this kind of interaction. And we were separated as species groups. But then the hierarchy from both groups have really surreptitiously undermined their civilizations on all sides. I think that even the reptoids underground probably have a hierarchy that they don't agree with, and these guys might be elitist military types just like we have ours.
Is it possible, John, that fallen angels were reptilians?
Well, you know, Yeah, I think that there's a potential that what we call the sons of serpents descended upon Earth and instructed humankind, that the reptilian image is actually something that has been very, very ancient. And even though human beings on the surface of the Earth may have undergone several civilizations before, that these guys drop in on occasion to watch what's going on and to participate in the show, because we're living in a big show. I mean, most of everything we perceive as real is nothing but other than what the press is telling us and what people are conformed to believe. You've been making history for the last, 10, 20 years, sitting here announcing every night that the world is not as it seems. And you know what? You must be saying something right, because there's a lot of people out there that agree. Yeah. So we all acknowledge that the world isn't as it seems, but some people just don't want to be woken up.
If I hear you right, John, you sound like the reptilians are probably getting the bad end of the stick here, the short end.
Well, I can't say it's undeserved. They have at times been, the bad boys on the block, just like we have, just like, some like Yahweh says, go down into that valley and kill every man, woman, and child. I mean, everybody has this potential to have really bad things and bad qualities. And I think that because of religious indoctrination, and hopefully I'm wrong, because of the potential of something reptilian humanoid coming back here on Earth and using that as an excuse, as a threat, to try and unify all the forces on Earth into one global movement, and to point an accusing finger at some craft that may have been remotely piloted and had part of an attack or something, and pull out a reptilian humanoid, after television shows and after 2,000 years of indoctrination, it would be really easy for us to be tricked into believing that something that's coming here to help us is actually something that's coming here to remove the power elite and try and give the Earth a breath of fresh air. And we've got to be vigilant of that. In other words, I think we've been through enough history, including Pearl Harbor, to recognize afterwards that sometimes we're manipulated into positions in which later on we find out that it may not have been the right move. I think everybody in their heart knows what's going on. And if you see something in front of you that's happening to where you see innocents or the helpless being defensively killed or hurt, step in and put your life on the line. But that goes for something that may not even be human that's defensive and helpless. Step in and protect that, just as you would hope they would step in and protect you.
Now let's go back, though, to the beginning of the show where we talked about Men in Black working to protect and maintain secrecy of reptilian humanoids. Mm-hmm. Why the partnership, if there is a partnership?
Well, we have to wonder why haven't all these other alien groups come down and made contact with us? We've had the tall Nordic blondes, we've had the insectoids, we've had the praying mantis type, we've had the long-nosed grays, we have all kinds of beings that are interacting with us, but there must be some sort of controlling force. Look, I had a friend a number of years ago that developed a solar tracker that was accurate to a certain degree of the sun, which is much more than anybody else had developed. They had problems getting it patented, and finally they actually received notes saying that they had to sign an affidavit saying that they didn't work for any military intelligence groups or anything like that, and that this wasn't proprietary information, that they were just trying to privatize. And then they ended up receiving something that quoted some law saying that if they find that there's a technology that's available that's trying to be patented that could be damaging to the U.S. economy, put millions of people out of work overnight or something like that, that they have a right out of national security to sequester that technology and pay you for it over a prolonged period of time, but like 20, 30 years, to where you're not allowed to talk about it, and that's all part of the agreement.
Huh.
And so you can understand, if you suddenly came up with something that would put millions of people out of work, is it really the right thing to do? And they have to have these checks and balances figuring out, what's worth bringing out. And there are roundtable groups that do back engineer technologies. I have personal friends and they're, that they've got other family members that have talked about, being involved in, projects that have gone underground and actually been. Somebody I knew that saw back in the 1960s HD 3D television in a box in an underground base in the 1960s. So if that's the case, then can you see how all this progression is being doled out to us at very, very calculated lengths of time, to where they can give us the least amount of technological advancement and then suck us dry of everything we have?
Well, we know one of the reasons we don't have so-called free energy or zero-point energy is because of the money and possibly what you just said, the effect on people's jobs.
Mm-hmm.
How many millions of people must work in all kinds of utilities?
Right. You have to take all that into consideration. It's just as much as when they came up with these tube shuttle systems in the 1970s that were connecting all these underground bases. You know, look, it would be really smart for us to take all of our infrastructure, even if we put up tube shuttle routes, not to take passengers, but just to take cargo back and forth to the United States. It would cut down on pollution. It would make so many things that would be good for us, including increasing national security and ensuring that we have a transportation system that can sustain a meteorite impact if we had one dead center of the U.S. or something. But the fact is that this kind of technology is being withheld from us, and it's being used by the elitists on the reptilian side as well as the human side to just empower that 3% that own everything. And that just doesn't seem right. They say that about America and the rest of the world. They go, well, you Americans, look, you eat up all our resources and this, that, and the other, but you only represent like 15% of, or whatever, 7% of global population. I don't know the figure. I'm just making this up as I'm saying it. But as a point, we're a smaller percentage that eats what and takes advantage of the resources of most of the world. But even in our own society, we have a top 3% that takes most of what we earn. But it's time that shifts around a little bit. Look, if we can take over GM and not admit that we're going socialist in a way in this country, then maybe some things need to be socialized and other things need to be like left alone to be privatized. There's no reason why the two structures can't seem to coincide together. It's the old thinking of our fathers, these guys that almost wrecked the world before us, that kept things in such contrasting means to where that's not possible. You know, true socialism doesn't work in Russia, but as we can see, this isn't working over here.
Is there going to come a time where there will be direct interaction between humans and these humanoids?
Well, I believe there has been.
On a mass scale.
On a mass scale. At Fatima, though. Fatima saw the craft come down, 72,000 people. I mean...
John, we all know the sun came down.
We all know the sun came down. That's right. We all know that somebody threw a frisbee. You know,
a big one.
Yeah, a big one. I believe that we are, if at all possible, even if the ETs are here and they're listening to us, even if they were over Mexico City in 1991 trying to point out something to do with the sun, obviously it's all solar generated. If you get these beings looking at timeline cycles and prophecies and symbolism all coming to a merging point in 2011, 2012, out of 200-300 years either way, there doesn't seem to be a more perfectly aligned symbolic alignment that we're going through, that these guys wouldn't in some way initiate that as a part of their own ritual. Some people believe it's after we go through a measured point of devastation, that we're going to come out the other side, the survivor is going to come out the other side and have a little help to pull their britches up and to put ourselves together after witnessing perhaps the largest depopulation on the surface of the earth due to environmental and other causes.
John, of all this work that you've been doing over the years, do you finally feel as if you're getting close to a finish here?
I'm feeling like there's the greatest opportunity for some sort of a breakthrough. I'm hoping that enough of us can carry enough thought form energy to where we can really just kind of pop the bubble and call out for help. Obviously, we can't change the system, and maybe we need to all have to turn around and at the same time, you know, just like in the movie Network, stand up and say, I'm sick and tired of it and I'm not going to take anymore. And say, listen, we've been trying to get our leadership to be able to provide us a vision of the future in which isn't so dismal, that gives us hope that maybe something isn't so corrupt, but we need some sort of a breakthrough. Maybe if we call out to the universe for that breakthrough, we can somehow have one of these forces, or at least the leadership that isn't part of some sort of federation group, finally say, well, they've asked, and the time is now, and the time is right. I can only pray that that happens. You know, it would be terrible to meet your end on the way out of your body, you're turning around and saying, man, I just didn't quite get to that point, and have it happen the next day, you know?
Who would be
it would just be terrible.
Who would be against the reptoids?
I'm sorry?
Who would be against the reptoids? I mean, do they have their own enemies out there?
Yeah, okay, let's see if I can kind of like surmise this real quick. I pointed out recently that if you look at ancient civilization here on Earth, you'll find out that that it appears as though this was originally a planet that was a reptilian humanoid, reptilian dominated, and that we mammal man were around, but these other guys were still dominating the planet, and that something happened to Mars and the other planet that ended up being the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, and that the surface of Mars was blown off. Maybe some sort of a solar event or some sort of a galactic event took place to where the atmosphere of Mars was blown off, and only the military industrial elite on the under the Martian surface actually came down to Earth as survivors. And that when they did, these guys were brought with them. The eagle is a symbol, and they were white Anglo-Saxon, large titan, giant men and women. And these are the Valkyries. These are the giants of ancient times that we talk about. And that originally they took some of the beings that were here and genetically modified them just so they could have somebody help take care of the planet. And that was supposed to be us. However, some fifth column group around here that kind of watched off to the sides and saw what was going on said this is kind of wrong to let these beings with such great potential go without some help here. And this is where the Garden of Eden comes along. They maybe the crab apple or a psychoactive substance was given to us, and suddenly somehow modified human thinking, and even the generations after that. And these guys, these Mars-based men, are very warrior cult-like. They believe in doing it their way. They are military-industrial complex all the way down to where we have today. And also the reptilian humanoids who were serpent-symbolized also were this kind of opposing group that always, between the two of them, there was like this balance of power taking part on this planet. And that both groups we've interacted with, some of them we call them angels, and the others we call demons or devils and such. And depending on who you're running into, they're demons or they're, they're fallen angels or they're benevolent beings looking in different life forms. But I believe that there's some sort of a potential for conflict that's going to be coming back. Another Mahabharata, one of these great wars in heaven in which the two sides are fighting. My suspicion is that they're really fighting over us as resources, our souls and our commitment, and that maybe...
Is it good against bad up there?
Well, it's not species against species, but really what we're looking at is we're looking at human beings that are trying to get out of the crushing hill of the oppressors that govern over them. And the same within the other species groups. They've had these elitists on all species groups that have been dominating everybody. And we're waiting for somehow that balance of power to slip over. And hopefully that time is coming up soon.
Sooner than later, John, I hope.
Well, yeah, sooner than later. I mean, you are broadcasting from somewhere deep underground, aren't you, George?
Absolutely. They can't find me. They can knock out my satellite, but they can't find me.
Right. Well, wherever we have an FM radio, George, you're our voice. Keep up the resistance.
And AM as well. Wherever.
Absolutely.
So what's new for you? What are you doing next with your projects?
Well, my next projects are doing work on the website. I'm updating the website and getting ready to start putting some production material in. I've still got my treatment sitting on a desk for a film project. If anybody's interested in really breaking through and coming up with a new genre of science fiction, just give me a call. The most of what you see on the website really represents probably just only about one-tenth of everything that I have. I couldn't give everything away because I just didn't have the manpower to do it. But a lot of these a lot of this data is soon going to be put into a public work in which everybody can review it and kind of get some sort of a common sense perspective going on what's going on with the planet and also the beings that may be interacting with us.
Are we in safe hands, do you think, John Rhodes?
I would say that the hands that you're safest in are the hands that are in action. We can't rely on governments to do anything. They've proven with, like, Katrina and such, that even if a disaster happens, we're not to rely on them.
Yeah, probably our own hands, too.
Probably our own hands, you know, and I would really say that if I were getting ready, I would follow the leader, and it appears as if the whispering through, you know, the channels that I have open into the intelligence network say that the government's preparing some old underground bases that they had abandoned at what time, and they're starting to take up refuge in them again. So there's a major push right now to go underground.
All right, when we come back, we'll take phone calls with the crypto hunter, John Rhodes. So get ready to let your fingers do the dialing. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, John Rhodes, and your phone calls. John, give us one or two more reptilian stories before we go to calls. Some of your favorites.
There was a gentleman by the name of Dr. Josh Hone that I had a chance to meet, and he had a very riveting encounter one evening, which he heard something down in his basement. He thought his cat got stuck or something in one of the cardboard boxes, and he walked down into his basement, and as he got to the bottom of the basement, he found the cat, and the cat was behind a box, but the cat was really, you know, trying, and it was acting weird, and it was difficult for him to get it. And I know his wife had sent him down to get the darn cat because the cat was making noise. But when he got down there, he sensed that something was actually in the basement with him. And when he turned around, he could see something that it looked like it was some sort of reflection of a light that was across on the other side of the room behind him, and it was, but it was suspended in the air. And then it was at that point, this being pulled forward into a small pool of light, and he could see that it was actually a very large, broad-shouldered reptilian humanoid being that had some sort of it wasn't naked, but he had some sort of a chest, almost like not football gear, but something that would be akin to some sort of a breastplate. And he also had a utility belt, and Josh had said that when he was at the base of the stairs, he doesn't remember anything that happened, but he did find himself actually laying on the floor inside the basement when his wife had come down to him. And it wasn't until the next day that after things started dawning on him what had actually occurred. He was actually in denial of the whole incident until the next day. But it was something that was revelatory to him, and he was afraid for years to ever let the story out because of being a doctor and everything like that. He was afraid it would destroy his credibility in the small community. The cat was fine. I think it was just coincidence, or the reptilian humanoid was in his basement, or he was there for Josh in the middle of the night. It was probably part of an ongoing series of abductions that he had had. In a case like this, it was just one of those other things where the people just wish they had not had an encounter at all, because they didn't appreciate talking about it. It was just too difficult to adjust in their life.
Something's going on out there, John.
Something is happening. Something's definitely happening.
Let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, my neck of the woods here in St. Louis. LaShawn, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. Thanks.
Hi, John. Okay, John, you know, I've been listening to the show, and oh, my God. You make it sound like they're these cute little cuddly little things, and they're not.
No, they're not.
They're not at all. And, you know, I talked about this before. I had my own personal experience with a reptilian, and it was not good, okay? And I felt something in my room, and when I opened my eyes, there's this man with his hands around my throat. Okay, he had very long, long blonde hair. He was strong like steel. And I'm pulling and pulling and pulling, trying to physically get him up off of me. So at that point, I got tired, and he was levitating over me. A lot of the reptilians are very advanced mentally, spiritually. They're telepathic. They can levitate. They're very powerful, not just physically, but mentally. Mm-hmm. And spiritually, they're very powerful. And what I, you know, George, I told you about this before. You know, if you call for that assistance, you will get that assistance. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I just said, you know, I just used the word spirit. You know, we all have that higher consciousness within our own being. And you mentioned that before, John. It is there. And if you call to it, you will get that assistance. I didn't know what else to do. And I said, Spirit, what do I have to do? And something said, let go and open your mouth. When I physically, I opened my mouth, and this loud, loud, like a lion's roar came from inside of me. And at that point, the reptilian lost his grip. He lost his grip, and I saw him hit the ceiling. He hit my ceiling. Mm-hmm. And my mom is in the next room sleeping, and I'm thinking she's going to get up any minute to see what's happening, and she never did. Mm-hmm. So he hit the ceiling, and then at that point, I heard all of these animal noises and sounds behind me, and then I began myself levitating off of the bed, which at this point, I felt like that was God guiding me, leading me. And in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, my mother's house, her house is just going to be destroyed because we're getting ready to do battle here. Mm-hmm. And as I got ready to turn around and face him, my eyes popped open. It's like I was like asleep but not asleep. Mm-hmm. So after I got up, I called a friend of mine and I told him about it. Later that year, we went down to Eatonton, Georgia, to a meeting with this guy who claims to have fought alongside reptilians. Jeez. He described the physical appearance.
Did you believe him, LaShawn?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes, George. Yes, I did. I don't have any proof of this, but it's something, you know, that inner knowing that we have, that gut feeling, and sometimes things, they feel right, and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, I had read his information before, and he claims to have fought alongside of them. He has all this information about their planet, and their planet was destroyed, and they went to this other planet, and then they came to this planet.
You're saying he fought alongside them. Was he, obviously he was on their side in some sort of conflict.
Some type of conflict, yes.
Yeah, so it shows that actually some other reptilian humanoids were in agreement with him and were good for him to be around, I guess.
Like, right? You've been saying, I guess, John. Huh?
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting, Sean, like you said that you had seen a man with long blonde hair strangling you at first. And then did he change into a reptilian humanoid? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I just saw his human physical appearance.
Right.
At the time,
okay.
I kind of had a feeling that that's what it was. But when we took this trip to Eatonton, Georgia, the guy started talking about it, and he started talking about their physical, like when they can transform into their physical appearance. And when he described it, and I said to my friend, I said, Leon, are you listening to this? Do you hear this? He said, oh, yes. He said, yes, I do.
Well, let me ask you this, John, because this is a great story. Are they shapeshifters, John Rhodes?
Some of them can be. I've encountered a person before that had their girlfriend had said that they had seen the boyfriend shapeshifting, and he had been a reptilian humanoid contact. And I kind of came in with a grain of salt, thinking that I'm rather cynical in the UFO community because I've had to filter through so many falsified reports and forgeries. But when I encountered this man, or I should say young man, he was telling me that sometimes he feels something move in his face. And actually, at that time, I had seen something. Now, I'm not a doctor, but I could see something underneath the skin of his face about maybe a quarter inch long move underneath the skin of his cheek, across the bridge of his nose, and under towards the other side of his eye while I was looking at him. And he kept saying that he feels snakes inside him. And now I don't know if this was some sort of a nanotechnology that somebody put in him and that was moving around. I don't know if it was some sort of connection with the reptilian part of his brain, because, you know, all of our face muscles are controlled by the reptilian complex in your ancient brain. So when you're operating from that area where you're really just on the verge between subconscious thinking and awakened state in your own home environment when you're walking around, I think that sometimes the face muscles will start acting and contracting by themselves without even the knowing
movement, the person who's doing it doesn't even know they're doing it, and they're seen actually having this happen to them. But at the other times, I really believe that we're just like angels. There's so many stories we've seen on television In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy and stuff, where they talk about people encountering angels that entertained them in their homes and fed them for Thanksgiving, and they'd go back there the next day and nobody was ever even there. If we have angels that can come down here in human form and fool us to that extent, I believe that there are other beings as well. So you have the eagle man with the angels, and then you have the serpent man, the snake, having the same type of interactions with human beings at times as well. And they're not always good. You know, she says that I try and make them sound, or I'm making them sound cute and cuddly. But, you know, that on the contrary, I was the first one ever to make any kind of statements as to the how terrible it is that the reptilian humanoids have been to humans throughout the years, asked certain ones of them, and how they can be the tricksters, and they can be devilish. They can be everything that you don't ever want to encounter. But at the same time, there are the majority of the others that we have to pay attention to that do not come across that way. They're underspoken reports because of the prevalence of modern ufology to throw into this fear angle and to let some of the rather ridiculous kind of take over mainstream ufology. Years ago, there's a lot of things that we're talking about now that back then they would have fought for the dignity of ufology not to even include it in the discussion. But it's a different world now. You know, we're entertained by a lot of these subjects.
Next up, we go to Joy in Eloy, Arizona. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I have a quick story about reptilians, and I'd like to hear John's comments on it. Real quickly, I had a fellow working for me about 10 years ago, and he was an engineering type, and he didn't spin yarns. He always spoke in figures and facts. And he had a friend that was the same type of personality, and his friend was dating this lady in Italy. So he was over in Italy with his friend, and his lady friend was a member, a distant relative of the Rothschild family. And so the people in Italy were asking her to get a hold of the Rothschilds and go see if she can get some funds to help the Holocaust victims there in Italy. And so she arranged for the meeting with Lord Rothschild up in England. Mm. So she went up there. And she was meeting with him, and while they were meeting, Lord Rothschild was called out of the room. And so he left, and she could hear voices in the other room, the next room, and there was a little door that opened up, a demolator door, you know, between the two rooms. And she peeked through this door, and there was Lord Rothschild taking instructions from a reptilian. Mm-hmm. And I would like to get John's comment on that.
All right.
Well, again, I've heard a lot of stories. We've all heard a lot of stories. It's very difficult at times to delineate which ones are true and which ones aren't. However, I can tell you through my experiences investigating it over the years that there's been very, very few cases in which a contact would happen in which there was anybody within earshot or eyeshot that was not intentionally supposed to know that they were there. We're talking about beings that who will, for example, appear in a child's room because they know that's the safest room to appear in the closet of a child's room, because they know that if a child reported somebody coming out of their closet, their parents would just brush them off. And also, you know, if you come out of an area that's not seen very well, you have the opportunity to know who you might be walking up against. You know, you can't just materialize in somebody's home. They might be having a Christmas party or something like that before you get down right in the middle of the living room. So when you hear of stories where it's especially connected with some sort of a leader, being in a presence of a reptilian humanoid where somebody has seen it and they've gone away to report it, I tend to think that those stories like that are highly fictionalized. I'm not saying they're entirely untrue, because there could be elements to it that I'm not familiar with that could lend credibility to the report. However, it seems that it's like everybody saying, I believe in reincarnation, but not everybody could have been Cleopatra. So at some point, you've got to say to yourself, how much of this is influenced just by conversation out there amongst people that make things up just so they can propel their ideological belief and project them onto other beings, like anthropomorphizing our subconscious demons, the reptilians of our id, by projecting them everywhere. We do know that these guys have got, heredity that has lineages that go back some, and they seem to be related. I truly believe that there's a linear hierarchy going on this planet, but I don't necessarily believe that everybody we run into, all the leaders are reptilian humanoids. You know, it's just, I just failed to see that happening. I think it's just easier for us, like I've said before, to be able to project the evils of mankind on some sort of an image that we've already been told is demonic and just let that go. You know, it's sad to recognize that we've allowed these guys to have such dominion over the planet. And it's a reflection of what humans are all about. We are the killer ape. You don't need the killer reptilian. We have the killer ape inside us that has demonstrated time after time after time that it can be truly, truly violent.
Do you think that Mothman, the people who saw Mothman, might have been seen some kind of reptilian?
Yeah, I do believe that, particularly a Draco. The glowing red eyes are also synonymous with reptilian humanoids. The fact that it was flying and seen overhead, and at some points it shows that they thought the eyes were down towards its chest. Well, if you're flying overhead and you've got your head drooped down low, it may look like the glow from the eyes is actually in the chest region, where it might actually be the head drooped down low. But, before some sort of a mass traumatic event like the collapse of Silver Bridge there, for that kind of event to take place, when people die, even in a local environment like in a house or something, a portal opens up. And the portal, when people enter that portal through some sort of a traumatic event, there's some sort of a psychological shock that people go through, like the pumping adrenaline of their terror as they see their last seconds of their eyes' life flash through by their eyes before they die, somehow gets impregnated into the ether at that point in time and puts a ripple in time space. And that when the people die like that, this portal that takes you over to the other physical universe, which we think of it as death, but it's just a vibrational difference in location. When that opens like that, you can go both ways. You know, the angels or the guides have been seen as balls of light to take people out of car wrecks. But then at the same time, if you can come this direction and you can take beings back with you, if that portal doesn't seal itself, there's a high potential for something else slipping through there until it does close and start having interactions with humans on this side. So,
I remember when I first started doing Coast to Coast, mm-hmm. and I had an interview with a woman by the name of Pamela Stonebrook. Do you
right.
know her?
Right, yes, Pamela.
She claims that she had a 3-year affair with a reptilian, and it was, for me, John, the most bizarre interview I had ever done, at least at that point.
Yes, it didn't make us human men feel very wanted either. Physically, I think if there's any relationships going on, they're mostly of a mental relationship and a spiritual relationship. The physical communions, I guess it could happen, maybe. I mean, like I've said before, there are humans that, you know, entertain themselves with animals, as distasteful as it is. So the idea of one species crossing over to another species like that, you know, I guess it could happen. But at the same time, you know, I've also known that that there's a lot of women that tend to have encounters like this that end up being, how do I say this, that end up being drawn into the control issues of their sexual life.
It's like a cult.
Well, no, yeah. What these people, especially with women, they tend to get into things like S&M and things like that because during their experiences, you know, that they perceived as being a sexual experience, there was this issue of control going on. So
yeah.
That truly becomes an issue with them for that point onwards.
Truly bizarre. We'll be back
truly
with
bizarre.
More phone calls with John Rhodes on Coast to Coast AM. We're with John Rhodes. John, why would we see reptilian sketches, artistical sketches of these reptilians? Do they always seem to be muscular and good shape? How come we don't have any, you know, out-of-shape reptilians? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's kind of like the advertisement for V, where the reporter turns to her and goes, aren't there any, you know, unattractive reptoids or reptilians or V's, you know, because it seems like the entire crew is really handsome. I think it's just the nature of a reptile and the way that its metabolism deals with proteins and foods that they tend to be very muscular and lean. There's probably more mammals that have additional fat on them for storage of and reserves of energy rather than a reptile. The fact that, you know, these guys are probably have been, how many years have they been actually, you know, working on a diet that's actually may be metabolizing more energy in a better form of it than we do. Look, it's not until recently we've come up with all this stuff to fatten us up and everything. You know, all this, you know, garbage we take. We try and, you know, fill in the gaps with something good, but you know how it is. It's always nice to splurge.
Back to the phone, Salt Lake City, Utah. We go west of the Rockies. It is Molly's turn. Hi, Molly.
Hi.
Hi.
I have two quick questions, if I'm allowed the time.
First of all,
I was wondering if, John, all of these different species, is there a supreme being above them all? A God figure who created all of them, in your opinion?
In my opinion, yes. I believe that the God that created us created them.
Okay.
You know, I think it's really interesting from a Christian theological point of view that we should think that we're the only children. You know, it's a large house, and there's a lot of brothers and sisters.
Second quick question is, I know that when I was 5, I was abducted.
Mm-hmm.
When I was born, on my birth certificate, I had O positive blood. I now have A negative blood.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been a mistake, I keep thinking. I always have that thought, though. I'm wondering if there is any genetic, if there are any genetic markers that say we may have intermingled sexually with them or
Right. Okay. First of all, the fact that your blood can change blood type, you know, there are human chimeras where the two embryos will actually merge to become one and share
mm-hmm.
blood types.
Rare, but it happens.
Very, very rare, but it does happen. There have been people that have, you know, tested Rh negative blood and go to Rh positive blood back and forth. We have tracked the higher incident and located a higher incidence of people who have had reptilian, humanoid, and other phenomenon happen to them that are Rh negative, which is a marker on the surface of the gene. It's actually a protein, and that it has a higher dominance in the races from Scandinavia, Ireland, Scotland, and also back into the Caucasus Mountains and into the regions where the Basques are in the Pyrenees Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And that this Rh negative group appears to have been perhaps some of the earlier linear experimentation groups that have been going down through matrinal or mother and daughter lineages. And just as we perhaps may have crossbred with Neanderthals, there may have been groups that a long time ago were taken off the surface of the earth and put underground. There were mutations that happened to everybody else. And then all of a sudden, the other group comes back up to the surface, but they've got red hair. They tend to be of tall stature. And archaeological evidence across the planet show that these people have gone as far as China, may have gone also down to the areas of where the Maya capitals were in Central America many, many thousands of years ago. So, yeah, there is something going on where they have had a hybridization program that's taken place, not entirely fusing together us so that we have scales, but on very, very minute levels where information, the same information that maybe carries dreams and other things that you may have been passed on through your genetic library from your ancestors, that type of information exchange on a genetic level. that perhaps affects the way the brain works or the way that one pursues spirituality. But, yeah, there are specific groups of people that have had interactions.
Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for calling. It was a great question.
Let's go to Rob, truck driving in North Dakota. You're up with us. Rob, go ahead.
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
Sure thing. Loud and clear. No snow out your way, is there?
Not yet. No.
Hey, Rob, where are you up in North Dakota?
I'm actually in Fargo, heading back to Minot.
Yeah, right. I was born in Minot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right on.
I got a little, you know, kind of insight for you.
Okay.
I was a state director for a UFO organization for 3 years from 94 to 96. I'm actually kind of nervous. I wasn't going to call in or, you know, say where I'm from or anything, but I got a tape sent to me with a, you know, flying object on it, and I have some friends in a newscast business, and they went and analyzed it, you know, made sure it was the real thing, and this was on a videotape. It wasn't like DVDs or anything, and so they, you know, it was a triangle object, three lights, and then there's like, you know, in those plasma balls that you touch and you can see the electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what we saw. And I'll back up just a little bit prior to that. Like if the police department or sheriff's department, you know, if they got any phone calls, they would call me. I would go out and do the investigation. Well, in Beach, North Dakota, there was a case, and OSI, my father's retired Air Force, so I was in my 20s and, you know, in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 37 now, and my father, he's retired Air Force. And so I know a lot of people from the Minot Air Force Base up there. And OSI, Office of Special Investigations, which I know I'm going to get a lot of crap now, you know, saying this on air. But they worked with me on the Beach, North Dakota case. I gave them some information. They gave me some information.
Mm-hmm.
But on this tape that was sent, two guys came to my house. One guy had a suit on. Wasn't like a black suit or anything like that. It was just, you know, dark colored suit, blue or navy blue or something. And then the other guy was wearing jeans, you know, just a jean jacket and jeans.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted this tape from me. So I gave it to them, you know, and then one of the guys called my house, which I didn't know they had my phone number. They called me, and they were just asking me weird questions like, do you live by yourself? You know, do you fear for your life? Blah, blah, blah. Kind of like scare tactic type, type questions. So after that, I resigned from investigating, you know, UFOs or anything like that. I was like, this isn't worth my, you know, this isn't worth my life, so. For quite a while, I've you know, been wanting to tell people that story. Only a few people know about it.
Wow. Well, thanks for sharing. You know, that's the whole thing. You know, I have an associate of mine named Tal that had done work back in the, you know, the aerospace industries. And the stories that they have coming out of the private corporate groups, which are a reflection of what the military-industrial complex is doing with these black operations, when these guys mean business, they absolutely mean business, and there's no mistake about it. I mean, there's no misinterpretations at all. And when it comes to being intimidated, it's just a matter of knowing that, you know, if they've got you, they've got you. And, you know, the thing is that a lot of this, you have to finally come out and start saying something about it. You have to, everybody has to step forward at some point in time in order to get it off your chest, because otherwise it's going to eat you up even more if you don't ever say anything at all.
That's a good point. Next up, we go to West Hills, California. Kurt, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Kurt, go ahead.
George, appreciate the opportunity to inquire. This is not the reason for the call, but it's amazing. I was born in Frankfurt, Germany. My father was on base with Elvis Presley.
Wow.
I was born O positive. I am now A negative, according to the Red Cross, when I donate blood. My whole point was this. I have been visited since 64, 35 years later. My sister confirmed from seeing out the door that I have been visited. My concern is I don't care if they take my body. I'm the driver. The body is just the car. Mm-hmm. But if they take my soul, that scares the heck out of me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's an allegiance of spirit. I mean, they're not fighting us over us as far as our physical resources. This is far, far beyond that. If you're just if anybody's thinking out there that somebody's fighting over just territorial possessions or physical possessions, they're completely missing the mark. What's really going on now is that there is going to be, as people have historically recalled, a war in heaven. And this is talking about it's talking about allegiance of your frequency or your soul. No matter how many times you come back here to reincarnate, they're both struggling over it, left and right, like two polar opposites. And really,
I'm struggling now.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the whole thing about this is that we don't need any one of these groups. Look, if anybody wants to fight over us, that's their game. But you know what? We're more powerful than we are, and everybody needs each other. And if anybody's fighting over your souls, then that's their battle. But we don't have to participate in it. It's a matter of staying as neutral as you can, because if you maintain a neutrality upon yourself and your soul, then you're in a point of balance and you're able to make determinations for yourself. If you get too emotionally drawn into one argument over another, they've got you. And they've done it to us before, time and time and time again. And the only way to stop this bad cycle is to break free of it, which means maintain your independence at all cost.
What do you think these underground caverns look like, John?
Well, I know I've seen photographs of some of the cavern systems down in Mexico that it looks like one huge chamber, like football stadium size after another, linked together by passages, and they're quite expansive. We've seen Crystal Cave most recently come up with those huge 9-foot crystals underground. Have you seen that photograph, George?
Yes.
Absolutely remarkable, you know. I know some of the military industrial complex have deep underground bases that extend more than 8,000 to 12,000 feet underground, and they're like small cities. And men in the black projects have met women in black projects, and together they've had children, and there's an underworld already in existence beneath our feet. It's part of the shadow government. There's a shadow government. There's also a shadow society in existence. And it's just too bad that we're left up here on the surface to fend for ourselves and never given the real truth as to what might be happening. Otherwise, you know what? I think we'd all be digging holes in our backyard, and we'd be storing food, we'd be finding water resources, and we'd be getting ready in case something happened to where the grid shut down for even 2 or 3 months.
Well, and it could shut down, John.
Absolutely.
We get hit with the next flare. Look out. We're history.
Absolutely. And, you know, it sounds so bizarre, but, you know, for like $85, $75 is some major outlet here that you can get 270 meals that last 10, 20 years for like $85. You know, it's easy to put that much away just to know that you have something. But if you have nothing and you've been told ahead of time, then you have nobody to blame when an event happens.
Good. You know, all these companies now are trying to go paperless, so you pay everything online. You get your statements online. Everything gets sent to your email. What happens when the grid goes down and you can't go online anymore? You can't do any of that for a while. I mean, everything's going to get clogged.
Everything will go. And you know what? You have to be reduced down, and you have to refocus your priorities in life. And it's not going to be all those electronics, gadgets, and everything like that. When this thing starts happening, I would suggest people just don't watch the news. You know what? I'd rather watch the Comedy Channel than hear any news, because the news is made to stress you out. And you know what? And if you can't help anything that's going on outside your local level, just start reducing your vision down to your local level and to your family.
Go ahead.
And then just kind of like, you know whatever happens outside your range of vision is going to happen, regardless of what you think or know about it.
I'll try to squeeze in a few more calls for you. Louisiana. Hey, Cornelius. Go ahead, Cornelius.
Hey, George and John, God bless both of y'all. I just want to say you got the best call screeners, Gina and Tommy. And I want to say if the Saints go undefeated, you know the end of the world is coming. So that's all, gentlemen. God bless you. Y'all have a nice night.
That's it, huh?
Yeah.
All right. You're welcome. Must be Tommy's brother or something.
Tommy. Yeah, that's right.
Got to be. St. Louis, you go. Hello, Rebecca, first-time caller. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be with you gentlemen this evening.
Hi, Rebecca.
I'm a little nervous because it's my first time really publicly discussing some of this, and when I tend to open up about it, things pop up for me. So, I mean, I've had a lot of experience starting when I was little, dreaming about, like, flying over my hometown and dreams of underground cities and a lot of experiences throughout the years. But my most intense were brought up with tonight's topic with the reptilians. And I happened to live in Las Vegas for a couple of years with a guy, I suppose, that I consider to be a reptilian. And it was very intense for me because it was a power struggle. And he came across as very charming, tall, thin, kind of a little bug-eyed, but very charming. And he said a couple of things that were alarming, that he knew me long before we ever met, and I kind of dismissed it. And then he got a tattoo of a painting. It was Fall of the Rebel Angels. But he wasn't, you know, satanic, or he didn't seem that dark.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of experiences in Vegas which were very intense for me, and where the people, I suppose, that I ran into even admitted to not being human. And one was...
Was it like a vampire cult, Rebecca?
Well, one situation may have been cult involved. I went to a house, and this girl offered to give me a tarot reading, and then it got really fuzzy after that. And I had a lot of missing time, and the only part I really remember is the third day and trying to get home. And I was driving with this girl, and then it seemed like it was no longer her. Her skin started to turn, like, kind of, it looked like it had a bluish glow to it, and her pupils were changing.
She shifted. I'm going to put you on hold, Rebecca. We're going to put you on hold. John, we're out of time, my friend, but I want to thank you. Good luck in everything you do.
Thank you very much. I invite everybody to drop in at my website at reptoids.com. Make sure also you go over to it. I have it there at the bottom of the page, a link to ABC TV. So you guys, whoever wants to talk about these reptilian guys, meet up and talk. Let them know what you think.
All you got to do is hold up your fingers in the shape of a V.